This is a View from the Bridge, official podcast of the Belfast Giants for kingdomofthegiants.com. Today is Friday, the 12th of June 2015, and my name is Patrick Smith. Well, Steve Thornton, Mark Lefebvre, Paul Thompson, Corey Nielsen, Chuck Weber, and Ryan Finnerty. You're going to hear from them all. We've got a big June double episode for you where we speak to six of the 10 head coaches from the Elite League. Neil the Coach Russell and Davey McGimsey will be joining me forthwith, where we'll take you through each of these interviews and we'll chat about the teams and chat about the things that they say. We'll also be rounding off the second episode with the chat with Steve Thornton and a talk about our very own Belfast Giants. If you want to get in touch with us, podcast at kingdomofthegiants.com, at AVFTB on Twitter, soundcloud.com/AVFTB for all the interviews. I'll be sticking up all these coaches' interviews in a couple of days. And www.kingdomofthegiants.com/podcast is, of course, our website. It is the sunny month of June. So let's get things going. June. I love June. June's like the month that I was born. It's when my wife's birthday is. Glastonbury's round the corner. The sun shines out. I'm in a dark bedroom at the back of my flat when the sun shines out the front. You know, but it's also halfway through the off season. This is going to be a great show. We've got six of the 10 Elite League head coaches to chat to. But first of all, let me introduce my two good friends. First up, well, the calendar may say June, but he always says March. It's Davey McGimsey. How are you, mate?
Oh, man. I like July better, as you know. So, it's good to talk, boys.
and also, you know, one question. And also joining us, of course, is a man who, despite being at Edgbaston during the week and seeing England rack up a record score against the one-day World Cup finalists, New Zealand, he'll still claim that Kevin Peterson should have been in the side. It's TV's Neil, the Coach Russell.
Evening, David. Evening, Patrick. Yes, a great day was had on Tuesday. And yes, I would still be singing along the same lines as Piers Morgan. Get KP back in the England team 100%.
Dear. Unbelievable. Right. Anyway, gentlemen, listen, we talked to six of the 10 Elite League head coaches in the show. And we take a look at how their teams are coming together. We'll also look at any news around the league before talking about the fortunes of our own Belfast Giants. This is a two-part show, a bit like last month, because there's plenty to cover. And in the second part of the two-parter, we'll hear from Chuck Weber, Corey Nielsen, and our own Steve Thornton. But before that, we'll be chatting to Mark Lefebvre, Paul Thompson, and we start with Ryan Finnerty, who, with the Champions League on the horizon, has shorter than most to recruit his team. And with Neil Black promising four-line hockey, there's to be a little pressure on this returning coach. And he spoke with our own coach, TV's Neil Russell.
Delighted to say joining us on this week's A View from the Bridge is the Breithead Clan coach, Ryan Finnerty. And Finner, let's get started straight away. Let's talk a bit about the clan and your current recruitment. It seems from afar that you're certainly taking your time over signing up your imports.
I think maybe some deals haven't come together as quickly as we thought, but we're pretty happy with what where we're at and what we got coming in. You know, obviously we're keeping an eye on how the league's kind of forming as well and adjusting our roster to that, but it's been good. You know, we don't have many holes left to fill, but you know, for us in Brayhead, we got to make sure that we are getting, you know, complete value for everything we do. We don't have a lot of scope to misfire here. So, we got to be 100% confident that is the guy at the, and it works and it's the right deal for both on ice and off ice.
I know there's two players who you've just recently re-signed who were big cogs in the wheel for you last season, Stephen Meyer and Jimmy Fritch, and I'm sure you're delighted to have those two back as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you know, starting with Mize, he's obviously a big leader in our room. He scored big goals. He played on our top line there with Keith there, and it's good to have him. It's good to have that partnership back with Keith there, and you know, he's excited to come back. I think he's decided to kind of pick it up where he left off last year. So he's you know, we're happy to have a guy like him, and he keeps our room pretty loose and entertained with all the Saskatchewan-ness farm boy talk. I quite enjoy him. I quite enjoy coaching him. So I'm excited to get him back. And obviously Fritchie, I think, is probably maybe one of the most underrated. You know, him and Scott Arson are some of the most underrated defensemen in our league. And you know, Fritchie, he plays big minutes for us. He's easy to coach. He skates so well. He does so many of the little things that maybe you don't notice if you only catch him a couple games a year. But when you coach him and you watch him every day, he's the ultimate professional. So we're glad to have him back. He's a great person. He's also a good guy in the dressing room. So it's took a little longer than we thought, but we got there, and you know, we're excited to have him.
And just as happy as you were about those guys returning, the obvious big loss certainly created a bit of a storm, certainly on social media across the Elite League, was the loss of Lee Salters to the Cardiff Devils. And I know how highly you rated Salters. You and I had plenty of discussions about him throughout the course of last season. And, you know, he's your stereotypical power forward, and he puts up big, big numbers as well. And I'm sure you're obviously devastated to kind of lose him in many ways.
Yeah, you know, it was... it's tough. I mean, teams are going for it this year, and you know, teams are willing to push out the boat, and I mean, that's good. Cardiff obviously is a team that have gone through the rigors and then now got some good ownership, and they want to they obviously want to win. So, you know, and then Salts at the same time was able to work that with an education package that we just simply couldn't offer. I don't even know if they offer that in Scotland, but what he got. So yeah, it was kind of we were kind of left empty-handed. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot we could do. So, you know, but like I said, I talked to Lee the whole way through. I talked to him after he signed the deal, and you know, people realize that players have short careers, and they got to make the most of it, and that's the business side of it. It's not always fun when you lose a guy like that, but you know, for Cardiff, they're probably pretty excited to get him. It's just up for us to replace that, you know, and to whether you place it in a couple spots or you try to find that Lee Salters kind of guy to fill that role, you know. But another day and another player shows up, and the way you go, it's the way our league is, and it's pretty much the way all sports is, I think, at the professional level.
You're obviously a big move here coming up this coming summer. You know, you've gained that Champions Hockey League spot. Is that influencing how you go about recruiting this team? You know, we've seen the likes of Sheffield who are also competing in it, and Tomo seems to be signing up his team quite quickly. But you're taking your time over. Are you feeling any pressure in terms of having to get the team signed up, and also looking forward into the Champions Hockey League as well? It's going to be a magnificent experience for the club.
Yeah, I think obviously it made me change my style up. I always kind of waited and tried to wait out the market to get that better player for, you know, more value, I guess, for our side. But, yeah, I mean, obviously we're still taking our time and still doing our due diligence on everything we're doing. I'm not getting rushed into making bad decisions here, because they ultimately cost you a lot more than waiting an extra week or so. But yeah, you know, we're excited about that. I think it does help. I think players now have a better understanding of what it is. I think maybe last year it was fairly new for a lot of guys, but even North American guys that haven't been to Europe now have a pretty good understanding and realize it is a pretty special tournament to be a part of, and a great experience for team building and going and seeing how, you know, different countries perform and how they prepare for, you know, not only on the ice, off the ice as well. So our management group and stuff, it's good. So a lot of positives, and like I said, well, we expect to be full strength going over there. We're not going to go in light-handed here, but you know, the recruitment side is definitely sped up with having to bring guys in 2-3 weeks earlier with all your visa stuff, and you know, so we are worried that we do have a kind of a final date where everything needs to be signed up, and I do feel we're right on target.
And you mentioned there about the team building side of it. You know, what expectations are you going into the Champions Hockey League with? Is it a let's go and enjoy the experience? It'll be a good opportunity to get out and get away out in the road and spend good quality time with the new team that you've put together leading into the Elite Ice Hockey League season? Or is it a case of are you going to go and try and cause an upset or two along the way?
I think it's important for us to go in and be the most professional we can be and go in with a winning mentality. You know, I don't think anybody goes into any game expecting to get beat or lose. It's, you know, but at the same time, we want to be professionals. We want to show that, you know, showcase for our league that we are the real deal here, and the league is growing, and, you know, we want to get up to those levels, whether it's, you know, in the Sweden or the DEL. So I think it's important for us that we go in, we're well prepared, and we put on a good show. And plus, we have a lot of fans coming over too, so we want to make sure that we do right by them as well. So no, it's like I said, it's we're definitely, you know, the underdogs going in, especially into Sweden. But by no means are we going in as for a good time here. We want to showcase our league and Brayhead and be professional when we're over there and put our best game forward.
What did they ask you as well, Finner, about the British development of the local players and kind of draw out exactly as a coach in the Elite League how you see it from your own perspective? Do you take any onus or responsibility to actually develop those players further, you know, for GB purposes and what have you? I know I see you're moving into the four-line hockey and you've brought on board the likes of Barry McKenzie and Coney and what have you this season. Do you take any responsibility there in trying to develop those young guys?
I think now that we are moved into this fourth line, it allows you to take a lot more responsibility. It allows you to work with these guys as opposed to the 10th forward. Then sometimes it becomes a 9th forward with an injury. And you know, so you're most of these, my guys were playing no matter what. But now we kind of got, you know, that fourth line now should push that third and two should push one. So I'm excited about that. It's new. I haven't had it. I haven't coached it before. So I am obviously doing my homework here and meeting with guys in Canada to obviously coach it at NCAA levels or junior levels. But yeah, no, I think for us, it makes it a lot easier than a guy that has 10 forwards, you know, because now you have a young line. You got a young kid like County that obviously wants to come in, he wants to impress, and he wants to play, but he's going to get good ice time. He's going to get good, you know, at home, we're going to get good matchups for him. And, you know, especially for those first 2-3 weeks when he makes that transition. And, you know, we put him, you know, with, you know, like, so, you know, Tristan Harper, or McKenzie, Esters, whoever it fits in there. You know, he's going to play with good players too that have played there. So I think it's important too. It gives you a bit of more time to practice. I think your practices can be structured a lot better when you got four lines as opposed to, you know, you're always overkilling one line, whether you're going, you know, 5-on-5 down low while one line's always doubling up. This allows that proper rest time and I think guys get more out of that because sometimes it can get a bit much and maybe only coaches in our league know what I'm talking about. But I think it'll open up so many more options for our practice. And we want to use our bench. I think that's one thing is we want to use our depth. We don't want to overkill guys. You know, we don't want our first line guys playing, you know, 38 minutes because we don't have the players to back them up, you know. So I think that over time, if we manage it correctly, will benefit us. So that is the one benefit of running a longer bench. So and we so got guys, you know, we don't have a fourth line. We don't, like us were saying, we don't have guys that are never going to see the ice. I mean, there's, you know, we have guys that are going to want to play and play in that top nine and are going to compete. And I think that's going to be great for us. And, you know, guys are pushing each other as opposed to you just have a job because you're always going to play because there's only 9 forwards. So, you know, I think that creates a bit of competition within the group. And that's always good.
I know last year, certainly towards, you know, the final lead in to the end of the season, you were crying out for a fourth line because you picked up quite a few injuries and you had guys playing with niggles and what have you as well. So probably be fair to say that you're an advocate of this fourth line.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, absolutely. I mean, for us, you know, we lose an import, we could slot another guy in, or we could shuffle the pack, and we could usually sustain, you know, any short-term 2-3 week injury. But when you lose a British player, like we did with Haywood, like we did with Esders, you know, now it becomes very difficult to replace that, you know, and you're balancing, you're trying to find, and then you lose another guy, and all of a sudden you got your centerman double shifting, and which is good in a short-term weekend, but consistently you can't do that. Guys get fatigued, and that's when other injuries start happening. It becomes a snowball effect. So that's one positive we are looking at, is the fact that, you know, we now have so much depth in our lineup that it allows guys, and then it gives guys an opportunity that maybe haven't seen it for 2 or 3 months to jump on the big line and play for a couple of weeks. And, you know, that's both season opportunities, and that gives the young guys a chance. So I think it's good. I think you get kids in the league. I think if every team had one, it would be, you know, if we could afford it, it would be great for British hockey.
Just finally, before we let you go, how's your summer going, and what are you up to back home, and when are you going to be back in the UK?
Yeah, we're just kind of waiting here to finalize the kind of last part of my visa, and then I'll be on the first plane out. Want to be over there a bit earlier to help out. So hopefully here in the next few weeks, I'll be back in Glasgow. But until then, I'm enjoying the 30 degree weather here on Vancouver Island. So it's not the end of the world. But it's nice. The summer finally came. It isn't time for me to leave again.
Finner, great as always to chat with you. Have a great remainder of the summer, and we'll catch up with you again at the start of the season, mate.
All right, buddy. Sounds good. Take care.
Thanks very much to Finner. Today, Brayhead announced they'd signed Stanley Cup winner, former Leaf, Duck and Penguin, Rick Jackman, from Ran Kuwabara's former team in Asia, the Nippon Paper Cranes. Davey, with regards to Finner, you know, with this Champions League coming up, there is a bit of pressure on him to sort of get that team together quickly. And with the signing of Jackman, that's a real intention there.
Yeah, Jackman's one of only two guys that he's brought in from that haven't played in the Elite League before. But, you know, the two guys he's brought in, pedigree, you know, Jackman's CV talks for itself. You know, he's played all over the world at very, very high levels. And he's going to bring that experience, and he's going to bring some real quality to the Brayhead clan. And they're going to need that, especially the European experience. You know, he's played in the Allsvenskan. He's played around in Austrian leagues. You know, he'll be bringing European experience with him to Glasgow.
Coach, you know, you spoke to Finner there. You could gauge from the fact that some of the players that he's lost, he wasn't too pleased about, most notably Lee Salters.
Oh, Lee Salters is a huge miss. That's a big, big pickup by Andrew Lord and Killer over in Cardiff. You know, speaking to Ryan a good bit during last season, I mean, he just waxed lyrical about Lee Salters the entire time. He, you know, he's a quintessential power forward in this league and puts up big, big points, especially in that Gardner Conference. And, you know, I think I said it quite a bit last year. I'm still amazed that Corey Nielsen let Salters leave the Nottingham Panthers. You know, this guy's, I think he stuck up 55 points for the Panthers in his first season over here, and then racked up big numbers last year for the clan. And, you know, obviously a top import, and tough as nails as well. I mean, there's not too many guys want to drop the mitts with him. So, you know, certainly from a Brayhead clan perspective, and I think Finner intimated that quite strongly, certainly didn't want to lose Salters. But, you know, you just know the way Finner goes about things and what have you. He likes to build his teams kind of around the way in which he played the game, which was a kind of in-your-face, rugged, blue-collar type team. You know, he'll certainly search and try and find another Lee Salters, no question about that.
And your thoughts on Jackman? Like, with the CHL around the corner, the Brayhead clan obviously have intentions to, I say competitive. Obviously, the Elite League teams aren't going to be as competitive to try to push as they might have been, but no team wants to go in there and disgrace themselves, least of all the Brayhead clan.
I think whenever I look at the likes of the Brayhead clan, you speak to the likes of Finner or Gareth Chalmers, who does a brilliant job over there with the clan as well. They kind of quite enjoy understating themselves and keeping themselves just slightly out of the limelight. These guys work incredibly hard. These guys are searching for the top end players. They've got a healthy budget. They've gone up 25% on their budget from last year. They have a good, healthy budget. You can be rest assured that Finner is out there, and with the help of Gareth as well, with a lot of his connections in the player agent field and what have you. They're going to be searching for some really top-end players. I would expect Finner to be bringing in some real... He already has brought in a couple of new guys, a couple of quality new guys as well. I fully expect them to add to that, because while it's the Champions Hockey League, I think everybody is fully aware that neither Sheffield or Brayhead are going to make much inroads into it. Still, the Elite League itself is getting bigger and better every single season. It's starting to creep more and more towards Super League standard, and the British players, quality players as well. So, I mean, Finner's done a good job so far, and I expect them to have a really good team in place come August.
Davey, we can't miss the fact that, we talk about the Brayhead Clan losing the likes of Salters and whatever, but this is the team that nearly won the league. The team that, that went, were right there, right to the death, and came second. The fact that they've retained the likes of Pitt, Keith, Harper, Sullivan, Stephen Maher, Lee Esters, this doesn't come as a surprise, because these guys performed last season, and more than likely they could perform again.
Should have won the league, really, Brayhead. We'll not call it a choke or a rower. Probably if Ryan Finnerty's looking back at it himself, they should have won the league from the position they were in with a few weeks left in the season.
Definitely.
And hopefully that experience, that is with those players. If they get themselves in that position again, they'll be better set to get across the line. It's a learning curve. You have to learn to win. You learn to lose very early in life. You have to learn to win as well, and that'll be ice is slippy. Yourself in your own sport. Sometimes you have a wee slip up towards the end of the season, and it just doesn't. You don't end up with the prize you expect. But he's brought in some quality there. The likes of Levitt coming in, another guy with a lot of European experience. I think one of the coaches, I'm not sure whether it was Finnerty there in his interview, but one of the coaches spoke to about recruiting from Europe. It might be like Mark Lefebvre later in the show. They look more to Europe at the minute for recruiting North Americans, because they've been across the water here. They know what they expect. They know the culture. It makes a much quicker fit than people coming in from the East Coast or from the AHL. Don't know the setup, the country, and the league, and how important it is. So that, it's interesting that they're really hammering into Europe and for their recruitment.
I think, Paddy, just to jump on what Davey was saying there, I think with regards to Finner, you could certainly see behind the scenes some of his leaders in the dressing room, some of his key core guys. And I think he's certainly now got three out of the four that he would have really, really wanted back in Matt Keith, Stephen Maher, and he's also brought Jamie Fritsch back. I mean, he spoke, he couldn't have praised him any higher. Thought he was an absolutely superb skater, brilliant defenseman, and just a really good guy in that locker room. And we all know how important that is as well, and obviously he's missed out on Lee Salters. So Finner will be happy with what he's done business-wise so far, but as I say, I expect him to upgrade on last season. I mean, you look at it and you think Bray really is Brayheads to lose again this coming season, because
I think, sorry to jump in there, Coach, but I think that his most important position that he's going to have to recruit is between the pipes. That's going to be, win the league, do well in Champions League, that's going to be their crucial position.
I couldn't agree more. I sometimes wonder, there's a couple of things about that. And funny, I had a very good chat with Paul Thompson about this on Tuesday, and he was talking about bringing in a new import in Eddie and how limited the options are because of this 75% rule.
50%.
It's 75%.
Is it 75%? Yeah, it's
75%. Because I had the exact same argument with Tom, and he said it was 75%, which basically I think he said there's one NHL goalie who would qualify to come over here for a visa, and two, possibly three American League goalies, and only two or three in the East Coast as well who would actually qualify to come over here and actually gain a visa. So I would say you could probably find Finner putting a bit of an onus on trying to get Kyle Jones back between the pipes because of that 75% rule, because there's not too many goaltenders out there that come from the top leagues that you would be looking to put in, as Davey quite rightly says, put between the pipes and be guaranteed, a solid netminder, somebody who you know. And that led me to kind of think, actually, on the way home from Birmingham on Tuesday, thinking, well, I wonder, will Finner take, if Kyle Jones does decide to hang up the skates, will he take a wee punt on Craig Kowalski?
It's a fair point. Kowalski, having missed a lot of last season, though, would he, I suppose, 75%. Would he have played 75% of last season, considering how much that Matthias Modig came in with? It's a really interesting situation for the Brayhead clan, because, you know, that was a position that was really good for them last season, considering going into it, we didn't think that Jones was going to be as good. You know, let's be fair, the season before, he didn't pull up any trees, but last season, he was key to their success. One thing to speak about just before we move on, gents, is the fact that I look at that sign, I see, at the end of last season, Neil Black was quoted as saying that both the Brayhead clan and the Nottingham Panthers would be running four lines. Now, the three of us know that key to being able to do that is finding the right British talent to be allow you to play that fourth line. And when I look down the list of Jordan Kearney, Ben Davies, Lee Esders, Matty Haywood, Barry McKenzie coming in, former Belfast Giant, of course, they are bringing in some key British talent to try and do that.
Another one, Tristan Harper. You know, they've got talent.
Tristan Harper, of course.
You know, I think what Finner was very clear was in his interview there was, you know, these guys aren't coming in to sit on the bench as a fourth line and not play. And the extra bit that they give in practice, that you can run better practice sessions with better depth. You know, I would love for ourselves to be in that position that we could go deep enough to have four lines, but it just doesn't look like we're going to be in that position this season. Certainly but the quality that the Brayhead clan have there in British talent and around the league, the British talent, all these GB under 20s that Pete Russell's been bringing up over these last number of years are starting to get roster spots here. And I can be sure that they're not just coming in to fill suits up.
The big thing about four line hockey, and it was a topic of discussion the other day again, was the management of it. And the management of your imports, and keeping your key core guys who are used to having a lot of ice time racking up the numbers in the league, because, you know, call the elite league whenever you want. A lot of players use this as a stepping stone as well, to kind of progress their careers and want to move into Europe. Because, you know, how many times over the years have we heard elite league coaches saying, you know, we're more than happy to bring somebody in here and use it as a stepping board to get them off into Sweden or the DEL, whatever it may well be. All of a sudden, if you're running four-line hockey on a consistent basis, some of those imports just might not get as much ice time and might not just rack up the numbers. So there's certainly a management issue there and from a coaching perspective moving forward. So I think from that perspective, it's going to be very interesting to see how the likes of Corey and Finner actually go about managing that throughout the course of the season.
It most certainly will. Next up, after his less than successful stint at trying to reform the country club of the Coventry Blaze, and then a Hungarian hockey hiatus, Mark Lefebvre returns to the Elite League with the Dundee Stars, who let Jeff Hutchins go at the beginning of the off-season. And Davey caught up with Mark earlier this week.
We're delighted to be joined by the new Dundee Stars head coach, Mark Lefebvre. And coach, first of all, thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
It's been a very busy 18 months for you, certainly since you came back into the UK game, obviously assistant up there to Jay at Sheffield, and then getting the Coventry gig. And you spoke when you first went to Coventry about trying to change the culture a bit of the club. There's a bit of a country club atmosphere going on there. And it was just a case that the change wasn't happening quickly enough for the likes of Andy Buxton and Peasy. They wanted to go a different route.
I think so. I think, you know, it's their business. They have the right to do whatever they want with it. You know, hockey, it is a business. And, you know, they didn't, the results were going according to plan. And they saw fit to see a change. And, you know, obviously worked out with it for them with winning the playoff trophy. But, you know, obviously I was disappointed to be let go and not see out, you know, my plans and everything for the club. But, you know, that's the way it goes sometimes. And, you know, I'm very happy to be in Dundee.
Well, as you say, disappointment for you, but you quickly picked up, you know, the job in Hungary. I'm not going to try and pronounce that team. You can go for it for us. Was that a good experience? Was it just good preparation for hopefully another head coaching position coming up?
It was definitely a different experience, you know, dealing with a translator, just dealing with a different way of life that I'm not used to. It's kind of it took me out of my comfort zone, which was actually a good thing for me, both mentally and on the coaching side as well. You know, just learn everything from preparation to how they do things. It's very regimented there, and that's a lot of things I want to take into Dundee, be more structured than I was in Coventry. And it was a great learning experience. You know, something probably needed. It was a good 4 or 5 months on the learning side of things and learn how they do things and things I can bring into the UK game.
Would there be any players, for example, out there in Hungary that you would, you'd go back to that well and try and bring into the UK? Or was it more just about getting, you know, new experiences as you just described?
For me, it was more about new experiences. I mean, you never close the door on anything, but, you know, that for me was just a good learning experience and trying to better myself as a coach. And it really tested me mentally. Like I said, you know, dealing with a translator and a language barrier for the first time, probably my career, both playing and coaching. So it really tested me there, and I think I passed the test, and it made me a stronger and a better coach.
And then, obviously, Steve Ward comes along April, May time and convinces you to go to Dundee. And all the sort of talk that's coming out of Dundee at the minute is he sees you as the man to push Dundee on to the next level. You know, it's a long-term plan here. It's not short-term gain for him.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's a long-term plan. I think, you know, it's a baby steps thing for us. We're a smaller club. We know that. Our expectations are realistic. But we want that conference title back at the same time. And I think we're taking the right steps right now and take that back. I think the roster we're building is exciting. It's going to be young and hungry. Obviously, you know, the club can't have another year like it did last year after such a high year the year before. And we want to go back to those winning ways, and I think we're taking the necessary steps to do that.
Well, then let's take a quick look at your recruitment so far. Obviously, Mark Chevrolet's going out the door. Lacazelle, the Czech goalie, coming out. Wow. He looks, you know, he might be 35, but he looks like he's had a tasty career so far.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the new rule changes. I mean, I crossed out about 40 goalies on my list, you know, with the new work permit rules. But, you know, when he came along, I talked to his agent, you know, did the necessary research. And, you know, again, experienced goal like that, you look at his save percentage, it's very, very good throughout his career. You know, he's got good size to him. And, you know, look at his club last year. They're in the Champions League this year, so he did well for them. So we're very fortunate to have him. I'm excited to see what he can do in the UK game.
And you bring up the you know, the IHUK, the new work permit. Just how much of a difference is that going to be for your recruitment system? You know, you've said 40 goalies. If you can knock 40 goalies off, I assume you can knock an awful lot more players off as well.
Yeah, you can. I won't even go into the numbers of that, but... you know, it gives yourself a bit more of a challenge as a coach to try and find these gems and, you know, diamonds in the rough and, you know, explore other leagues around Europe and that, looking for these kind of players. And, you know, we've got another one in Mikael Liedhammer and from the Allsvenskan League. You know, that opened up a door for him. I think he's going to be great for us as well. So it's going to be good for the league, I think, in finding new talent throughout Europe.
Well, with the exception of young Craig Muir so far, all your signings have came in from within the Elite League and European leagues. Does this point to a specific style of play you're hoping to play, a more European type of game, or were these just targets you had an eye on and you wanted to get the business done early?
Well, the two guys that we signed on the back end there, in Corey Pritz and Jason Gray, you know, we wanted to have our defense be mobile. If you look at, you know, the ice surfaces in Dundee and Hull, Murrayfield, Braehead, I mean, throughout the whole league, other than Cardiff and Coventry, you know, we want to have a mobile defenseman that can move the puck, and those two guys certainly do that. Obviously, we have McCluskey back, who I think is a phenomenal young British defenseman, who I think, you know, in my opinion, he should be on the national team. You know, we're fortunate to get Craig Moore, who captained, you know, to the gold medal in the U-20s last year. You know, so I'm pretty happy with those four guys. All four of them are mobile. In terms of front, I mean, Doug Clarkson pretty much fell in my lap. You know, I totally expected him to be back in Cardiff, and it was a nice surprise phone call from his agent and his brother last week, and seeing that he'd be available, and, you know, we got the deal done pretty quick, and it was a no-brainer for me. I think for our club, looking at the videos from last year and from talking to different people, the club was pushed around quite a bit last year. We don't want to have that happen again. And I mean, Doug's the perfect guy to help us with that. And, you know, he's also got a nice scoring touch. I mean, he had 20 goals and 200 pims in a pretty tough conference last year. And We're looking forward for him doing the same this year. You know, in terms of the overall recruitment, it's not so much I'm looking for guys just played in Europe, but they know what they expect when they come over here. You get a lot of guys coming over from the coast in the American League for the first time, and there's a whole bunch of, you know, changes in their life they have to make, and, you know, cultural changes, style of play, all that kind of thing. So, you know, for me, looking for guys who've played in Europe before and get that experience, I think that can only benefit us.
On the British question, and it's a question that we've been asking all the coaches we've been interviewing this week, you've already spoke about the, you know, the good core that you have, Big Sam McCluskey, you've the evergreen John Dolan in there, Craig Holland, who's been about for years, even though he's only, I think, 22, 23 or something, and we've talked about the very talented Craig Moore. Do you feel any responsibility as a coach to the British national setup, or is it just all about satisfying Steve Ward and satisfying the Dundee Stars, and it just, if success comes there, then those players will hopefully catapult in the British game?
Well, for me, obviously, we want success with the Dundee Stars first, and that's our main focus, you know, bring conference title and back to Dundee. But on the other hand of it, you need the British players to have that success. You know, that's why we went out and, you know, we lose McKenzie and we lose Swindlehurst. I need to replace those guys and, you know, kind of find a better replacement than Craig Moore. I think, you know, to get the GB under-20s gold medal winning captain on your side is a big thing for a club. In terms of responsibility for the British team, I mean, you got to keep finding these younger British players. You know, a lot of the British players are getting older now, and, you know, you got to replenish the system. And I think there's a lot of good young British players coming up. So, in terms of responsibility, I think, you know, we are employed by in this country, in the UK, and, you know, you want to see the British national team do well as well. So we do have some responsibility in that case.
And obviously you're going to see the conferences from either side now. You know, you've seen the Urquhart Conference with Sheffield and with Coventry, and now you're going to be going into the Gardner with with Dundee. Just the strength that the conference system has brought to the Scottish game, you know, you've got a lot of head-to-heads there. It's going to be a difficult enough conference to get up towards the top of.
Yeah, I mean, I think the two conferences are going to be different. I mean, if you look at the signings in you know, with the conference with Belfast, Cardiff, Coventry, Sheffield, and Nottingham, it looks like it's going to be a bloodbath every night, the way that, you know, some of the rosters have been built. But I think our conference is going to be more wide open. I think, you know, look at Edinburgh, you look at Hull, Marcel's, Fife, Brayhead. I mean, I think more of our style is going to be more wide open compared to the other conference. So I think it only helps going back to Scottish, it only helps, you know, our Scottish teams as well, the conference system as well. It builds up the rivalries and it gives them a chance every night to beat and be in line for trophies.
And you've obviously spoke just slightly earlier there about trying to get the Gardner Trophy back, and you want to set some targets for the season. I take it that is the main target and the qualification for the playoffs that would come along with it.
Yeah, I mean, those are the big things for us. I mean, we're realistic here at our club. I mean, our big thing is we just can't have a year like we had last year. We don't want to finish last again. We want to make sure we get to the playoffs. We want to make sure we're competing for the conference title. You know, even the Challenge Cup, we want to make sure we're releasing the quarterfinals. You know, the way the system's set up, you just got to get yourself to advance. And anything can happen in those two-leg series. So for us, those are realistic goals for us. Obviously, you know, everyone wants to say they want to win every trophy. But at the end of the day, we want to make sure we're a big competitive team every night.
And the plan for Mark Lefebvre for the rest of the summer then, is it, you know, keep the phone on full charge and keep the contracts flying out? Are you more of a patient guy? Do you like to play the waiting game and see what's available come August time?
Well, I think this year I'm going to be more patient than I was last year in Coventry. I think, you know, I was a little, pulled the trigger a little bit too early on a few things last year, and instead of being patient. This year I'm just kind of waiting out to see where things fall, and, you know, guys who are probably not available in May, they become available in June, mid-June, early July, mid-July, when they feel like things aren't going to shape up for them in Europe, and, you know, they come back here. So we're being patient right now. Obviously, we're a smaller budget club, so we want to make sure we have the right people and the right players in our dressing room, you know, for our club and try and, you know, seek out that conference title. And, you know, but my phone, I mean, I don't envy my mobile bill in the next month here, so, but it's always on, and you know, it's part of the job though, and I really enjoy it.
And I suppose finally, before we go here, you know, it's always good to have a young, confident, you know, coach in the league. But what can the Dundee Stars fans expect from you this season? Especially, what about these suits, Mark? Are they you know, consigned to the dustbin, or will you be cracking a few of them out?
There's a few on order right now. I'll put it that way. There's I have some ideas floating around there, but it's going to be waiting to see. I think I got a special few things in the suit department for this year, but as long as we're winning hockey, I don't think it really matters what shit I'm wearing, the fans will be happy.
Well, Coach, as always, we thank you for your support. You've always been very good to us here, and we'll catch up with you later on in the season.
Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
Thanks to Mark. Coach, you know, much to be said. Is there much to be said about his recruitment last season led to the Coventry Blaze winning the playoffs?
Again, a bit of a topic of discussion recently there. I think Lefebvre, what he won't do in Dundee is what he did, obviously, in Coventry. He recruited quite a few older-type guys and had a lot of experienced guys under him last year in Coventry. And he's quite a young fella himself, Mark, and what have you, and stepping into the coaching side of things. I think this year, moving into Dundee, he'll be a year or two older and a bit more wiser. I think he'll certainly go for a younger team and a team that you know, he can really impart his own views and his own standards and what have you. I think he just found it very difficult in Coventry last year with a few maybe old-timers and what have you, trying to convince those guys who have been around the block plenty of times. So I certainly expect from that point of view in terms of recruitment, I think Lefebvre will just be that wee bit cuter whenever it comes to it.
Davey, you brought up the point there in regards to Chevrolet being out the door and Vlastimil Lakasil coming in, a guy with an immense amount of experience. I'm just looking at his, you know, at his stats here on Elite Prospects. The guy's fairly been around the block. He's 35, a lot of experience in the Czech Republic, a lot of it in Slovakia, Kazakhstan. A bit of experience between the pipes, and a player like that coming in so early, it's something to build on.
Yeah, and he's won personal trophies wherever he's went, best goalie, you know, best, you know, save percentage, bar a couple of seasons, well over, you know, 91 and wherever he's went. You know, he's a season in Slovakia there, he's 973, and this is going to be a really, really good goaltender.
Best goaltender in the Continental Cup in 2009. That's a very interesting one.
It was interesting, what the conversation we were having there previously about Finner ban or getting in his goaltender, and Mark Lefebvre saying there straight away when the rule came out about the work visas, he had 40 goaltenders that he just had the stroke straight off his list. You know, that's the amount of people that, and he says, if you take 40 goaltenders out of it, imagine how many just out skaters you've got to take off it. So this is a difficulty that, you know, they're going to face. And he has brought in what looks to be a very, very good goaltender.
Yeah. I think like I say, Coach, it is something for him to build from. And in the past that, you know, the Dundee, they dropped off last season after a great season previous. So after taking over from Jeff Hutchins, Mark's got a bit of a clean slate here to work from.
Oh, he does, definitely. And, you know, if you look at the backbone of that Dundee success from 2 years ago, it was all built around Dan Bacala, who's gone on to forge a very nice career for himself so far in Sweden. Mm-hmm. I think he was top netminder, wasn't he, last season over there in Sweden. So, I mean, that's a building block. I mean, everyone knows it. Steve Thornton talks about it a lot. You hear every single coach talking about Corey Nielsen over the years with Craig Kowalski. You'll hear Corey talking about how much he rated and loved Craig Kowalski. I mean, you know, a coach's big, big role is to secure the services of the top, top netminder. If you have a guy that can help you win every single night, be solid as a rock throughout the course of the season, be highly consistent, you know you're going to be in with a chance of picking up some success come the end of March and the start of April. And certainly it looks like Lefebvre has gone about recruiting a very, very good goaltender.
Interesting, David, Doug Clarkson fell into his lap, a player that maybe didn't start so well with the Cardiff Devils, but really forged a decent elite league season last year.
Clarkson's a funny one, you know. Mm. He was so highly regarded in Cardiff, and I was there whenever he skated off for the last time, and it was very interesting. He had lifted his small child up, and he was skating around, and he was patting the badge and waving the crowd, and it was a real cheerio. I really felt that he wasn't going to be back in Cardiff, but it's interesting that he ended up in Dundee, and it's interesting the way the Feb's talking about it there. You know, his agent, who's also his brother, you know, called up and says, you know, what about having a punt on Doug here? And he'll fit in very well up there. The league is toughening up all round, and, you know, as Lefebvre says there,
the Earhart Conference looks like it's going to be a bloodbath every night. Some of the players that are being signed up by the teams, and you know, he's put a bit of depth in his team there. Clarkson can do a bit of it all. He's a big body. He can score goals. He can set other people up. He does all the dirty things. It's a very, very good signing. And, you know, this is going to sound really, you know, not even sure what the word is, but I'm surprised that he went to the Gardner Conference. I'm surprised there wasn't another team within the Earhart Conference took a punt on him.
Yeah, I agree with you. I was kind of half expecting Chuck Webber to take a bit of a punt on him in Coventry.
Yeah, fair point.
Not a lot of toughness there so far in Coventry. I know Webber would probably try and avoid that at all costs if he possibly can. But, you know, every team probably, especially in the Earhart, will just need that wee bit of protection. Every team's getting that wee bit bigger and slightly meaner. And, you know, Big Doug Clarkson proved last season, as the season progressed, that he can play the game as well. So I was kind of surprised that he didn't... He wasn't making his way to the Skydome.
Are we being overly derogatory towards the Gardner Conference, or is that a fair enough comment? You know, that you expect these top end. Like, there's no doubt Clarkson was one of the very good players in Cardiff last season. You know, is it derogatory of me to expect him to stay within what I would perceive to be the stronger conference?
Derogatory, I don't know, is the right term. I think it's all about experience. I think a lot of us are tainted by the fact that Before the advent of the conference system, the likes of Dundee, Fife, Edinburgh, let's be fair, they were always propping up the league. And even this season, the season past, they were still in the bottom half. But that's not to say that they weren't taking scalps off the perceived stronger sides. I do think that it's year on year that the Gardner Conference and the teams within it have got stronger. That's without doubt. The fact that we had two Gardner Conference teams in the playoffs a couple of years ago is testament to that. We go back to the big debate between me and Hitchy, but derogatory, possibly. Well, I don't know whether it's the right term or not, Davey, but I do think that it still is a case that the likes of Dundee, Fife and Edinburgh, who are starting to recruit in a very different way, is whether they will start to compete at that higher level. And that all comes down to where they end up on the league table, because they play more against each other, but they still remain around the bottom end. Something's not right there. They should be gaining more points. But then if they're going up against the Earhart Conference teams, they're not getting those points to allow them to climb. So there still is that disconnect between the two conferences, but it's coming closer. The gap is shortening. Coach?
Yeah, and players like Clarkson signing for the opposite conference is only going to close that gap even more. It's a positive thing. I just think I was maybe a wee bit harsh with my words there.
I think it's more of a reflection, Davey, of the fact that the Earhart teams, I think, are going to come out even bigger, as I've already said, bigger and stronger next year. I think the quality of the import that's coming in, I think in a normal year in the Elite League, I think you're 100% right. I think you would have seen the likes of Doug Clarkson easily move to another Earhart Conference team. But I just think the Earhart boys, the big arena teams with the bigger budgets, I think they're just going for a lot of quality. And it appears to be a lot of quality players are on offer this season. So I think that's probably why you see that drip feed effect, and you see the likes of a Doug Clarkson going down and playing for the Gardner Conference and playing for the Dundee Stars. I think he'd be a good player for them. It'd just be interesting just to see. Sometimes it's easy. So you saw last year in Cardiff how energised that fan base was, that entire wee tent that they play out of and what have you. You know, and it's easy for a player to get up every single night whenever you've got that noise and atmosphere in a building, and you've got a team of guys who obviously get on really well. Just be interested to see, obviously, with Lefebvre putting together a brand new team there, and is he going to be able to get that team? I think it's so important whenever you're putting pretty much a whole new team together. You've got to get the right guys in the dressing room, get the best out of the likes of your Doug Clarksons and what have you. Because if Clarkson has to be the heartbeat guy for the Dundee Stars, he has to be that guy that goes out and hits everything and drops the gloves in a case and energises his team and what have you, and also sticks up the points as well. So I think I think Martin Lefebvre has recruited pretty well so far.
I think what I also say is look the other way. Look at Nickerson, Fitzgerald, who else? Lukasiewicz, Salters. These are all guys who have played or mm-hmm. who have come from the Gardiner Conference into the Earnhardt Conference because, you know, you do have that, as I say, you have that perceived, you know, different step up. But these guys have been playing in the Gardiner Conference and they are good, or I hate saying good enough, it does sound derogatory, but they are being poached by Absolutely. Earnhardt Conference teams. So there is a little bit of parity between the two. The two conferences, that, and that gap is closing. We will see this season whether Lefebvre is able to go into Dundee, take on that side with that clean slate and bring them back. Because let's not forget that Dundee were right up there the season before last. They were conference champions. They were in the mm-hmm. was the top three or four that season. And if you recruit well and you can get that team to gel, there's no reason why the Gardiner Conference can't just get stronger and stronger and stronger. What, Davey, in which case then would you see would be the targets for the Dundee Stars this season?
It's gotta be qualification for the playoffs, really, and trying to get that Gardiner Conference trophy back. You know, the 1 or 2 years ago, unceremoniously, you know, flunked last year. So it'll be, I think, you know, the talk coming out of Dundee is that it's a process they're getting starting here. You know, I don't think they'll win the conference this year. I think that's too big of a step for them to go from last place to first place. You know, I think they'll aim to get into the top eight and just keep building. But you never know. The puck hasn't been dropped. It's still a few months away. There's still, you know, lots of roster space there. It'll be interesting. You know, Lefebvre's a young guy. As coach has already said there, I think he'll bring in some younger players, some new players, the league with a bit of speed, and he's certainly, that experience that he had for a few months in Hungary seems to have given him a buzz again about getting a good team going, and you know, good luck to the guys. He's a very nice guy to talk to, so wish him well.
Well, let's move ahead. Finally, for this part of the podcast, we spoke last time about the coaching movements in Sheffield. Adams, of course, being unceremoniously released from his contract, and in came a name we all know in Paul Thompson. And I spoke with Paul a couple of days ago. Of course, he then went on to become good friends of Neil the Coach Russell. But I spoke with him a couple of days ago, and I began by asking him that, you know, after 2 seasons in Europe, what brought him back to the late league with Sheffield?
Well, I think originally, you know, the family side of things, I was away on my own. And, you know, I'd come back in the international break, so the family would come over. And it's tough. It is tough being away. I've got 2 young kids and obviously my wife. And, you know, that was tough, but it was, you know, we did it from a career point of view. So, you know, that was a big reason. And then, and secondly, you know, when the Sheffield job became available, all the things that, you know, I kind of wanted to bring into my next job, wherever that be, you know, the ownership here was totally behind that and wanted that. So it just, you know, it felt right. And so I'm happy I'm back, and I'm happy I'm back with Sheffield.
You had a bit of a tumultuous year in Troy, followed by, you know, a first-round playoff exit to Frieshaven and Aalborg. You know, when you look back at those years in Denmark and in Sweden, how do you assess them? Do you see them as successful? Do you see them as a good learning experience?
Well, it's so different over there, Patrick. I mean, you know, we were on a bottom club in Troyer, and I only got the head coaching job with a handful of games to go. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I proved in that time that maybe if I'd have had the job at a later stage, we may not have got relegated. But that's one hell of a league, let me tell you. It's one hell of a league. And we were a low-end team, and we got beat out in the relegation round, which, you know what, I learned more from that than I've learned in 20 years in coaching, the pressure and what comes with dealing with that. But, you know, we finished third in that group, and Peter Heston beat us out. They were better than us. We lost on the last game to stay up in Björklöven. And that's the way it goes. I mean, you know, that's the way it is. We were a low-end team that was really scraping all season to put results together. But it was a fabulous experience. And I can't have been that bad. They offered me an extended contract.
Yeah.
Carry on.
No, I was going to say, you say about, you know, that pressure is on. It must be down to culture, really. It must be down, you know, in comparison to the sport here, to the sport there. It must be down to the fact that it is so ingrained in their culture, being a winter sport.
Well, absolutely. And the hockey knowledge is, no disrespect, is far greater, because it's like their football. It's like our football.
Yeah.
You know, everybody grows up with it and understands it. So, and you know, you're in the limelight, every game's televised. But it's great. I mean, the talent level you were working with, I mean, I think we had something like 18 games going to overtime. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like we were a bad team. It's just we just didn't have that cutting edge to take it. You know, if we'd have maybe won 7 or 8 of them in regulation, we'd have probably finished, you know, halfway up the league. And that's how tight it is over there. So a great experience. It wasn't a great experience, you know, going down. But it was something that I enjoyed, and I had other opportunities to stay in that league as well. So, you know, it's, that's the way it goes. But I came back and spoke to the family about it, and then we decided, you know, I got an offer from Aalborg. Aalborg were one of the top teams in Denmark for many, many years, and big, big budgets, and they totally changed. Mm. It must be me here. They totally changed their thoughts, and they wanted to bring someone in that was really going to coach this young group of players that they'd got. They really didn't have the ties to the juniors that they'd had previously, so there was a big, big building job to do there. And you know, when we brought all our young kids up and through, I mean, we had 5 17-year-olds at the start, they were wonderful, talented players, and it really was a different job than what I'd had in the past over the last 2 years, where, you know, I'd worked with a lot more veteran players, you know, a lot of 30 plus players. Well, these were young kids that are, you know, making their careers and go on into the SHL. Some will probably end up with the NHL, and the talent never really was that good. But it was a fabulous job in Aalborg, and I was offered a long-term deal to build this group, you know, a 3-year deal. But, you know, again, it was a family decision that stopped me going back to Aalborg, and then Sheffield became available, and, you know, it was offered to me, and I don't regret for 1 minute that I'm coaching the Sheffield Steelers.
Well, it's interesting, like you said, with the experience you've gained there and now coming into the Sheffield Steelers being the league champions that they are. And you came in with probably the best player in the league, Mateo Roy, already in place. And you've started to build your own side there with a bit more of that European flavour. A lot of the guys that you've already brought in have played in Denmark or played in Sweden. And that must be a conscious thing from your experience there.
Well, I think it's a conscious thing, but it's a thing that, you know, I saw them. You know, I saw Jace Coyle every day. I saw his qualities every day. You know, I saw Russ Moyer. I coached against him for a year. And obviously, he played in Aalborg, so my assistant coach actually played with him at that time. So, you know, I got more information on him. And so it's not just about where I've been. I mean, we are trying to change things going forward in Sheffield. And it's not just about what I picked up abroad. I've been coaching 22 years, Patrick, and, you know, I was pretty successful in Coventry as well, and I think that gets overlooked at times. You know, it's not about that. It's about every day you go in and every environment that you go into, you learn. And I learned a different culture and a different style over in Scandinavia. You can't totally go and bring that back because it won't work here. But what you have to do is look at the good things that they do there and adapt that to the British Canons and Sheffield Steelers, and that's exactly what I do.
Has it been a clean slate at Sheffield, or, you know, because you're taking over from G, who had a success with regards to the playoffs and the league title. So you've come in there and the team that were already established with regards to WA coming in. Now, has there been a cutoff with G and you take over from there, or has there been an overlap but you're looking at some of the players, or what sort of approach have you taken there?
I don't know. I can't control what happened, Patrick, and it's, you know, What happened? That's a question you need to ask Tony. Gee, I've been asked, you know, I've been asked this 1,000 times since I took the job. I can't control that. I can't look at that. It's the way it is. It's the game. Mm-hmm. I'll get fired and someone will take my job. That's the way it is. But, you know, there was obviously, Jay did a good job and he signed some excellent players, and I'm lucky to have the opportunity to work with the Fletters and the Wars and the, you know, the Cullen Eddies, and obviously a fabulous group of young British talented players as well. So, yeah, I'm overjoyed that they're still part of the club. And, you know, I spoke to them on the day I took the job over. And, you know, I don't worry too much about what's being said in the outside world. In the inside world, we've got to get on and do a job.
Well, you bring up the British players there, and one of the big talking points in the AHL is the development of the Brits in the game. And, you know, 12 months ago, the increase in the import limits was first mooted. Your objection to the move was pretty clear, and you give an interview to the Coventry Blaze website stating that you couldn't stand idly by and watch another Super League form. Now that you're in that role with the Sheffield Steelers, where it is within your control over the import limits and the British players, are we to assume that you're going to veer down a more stronger British route, or are you going to keep up with the Joneses and fill up that import limit?
Well, No, I mean, you know, I've been employed to make sure Sheffield Steelers the most successful job ladder bridge. I was in a different role previously, obviously with Coventry and with an ownership element there. No, I mean, you know, my job foremost and formally would be whatever it takes to make Sheffield win. But I obviously have a double attachment to the fact that I coach Great Britain for 5 years and we need to create a young pool, a new pool of players coming through. I mean, I just worked in a league in Denmark where, you know, we had 5, 6 American League players play for us last year, and we played against Rodover, who had no imports, none. And they beat us 4 times. And that only took 8 years to get to that because they actually went back into their development side. So, you know, I mean, with the under-20s, that's totally reversed away from where I thought it was going to go. But it's still, the age group has been moved in England, so in England, to 20, to the level 20, so guys, young kids don't just fall off that, you know, fall off the edge of 18, because the gulf between us and the elite league and that level is absolutely vast. So, but I think 4 lines, you see Nottingham, you see maybe yourself, Belfast, Brayhead looking to bring 4 line teams in. If other teams do that, they're going to have to recruit young British talent for that, which will be a good thing. Speeds the game up, it brings these guys in, attach themselves to elite league or good EPL teams and bring that forward. So I have my views, but I'm employed to make sure they win.
Is that so? The case is the fact that the competition within the league, the pressure on to win games, the pressure on to maintain a successful Sheffield Steelers means that you have to veer down that line of, you know, putting more imports in the team rather than trying to develop and take chances on younger Brits? Because
look, I don't make the rules, okay? I never have made the rules. I've never made them at Coventry. You know, the rules are the rules. But that doesn't mean that I'm not going to try and look to develop young kids around us. I am. But at the end of the day, if you bring an import in that played in the American League or you bring some 18-year-old kid in, you know who's going to be the better player. But what we've got to do as a nation is create this pool and drive them up and through. So ownerships may say, oh, you know what, we actually don't need that number. But that's not the, you know, that's another huge total, not argument, total way to... I don't know the word I'm looking for. A totally different avenue to go down eventually.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the easy thing right now is to say we don't have the British kids, so we'll increase the imports every year. You know, the harder thing actually is what I tried to do with the Elite 20s, was actually create a pool of players over a period of time, over a few years, that would drive that option down.
So where does that Elite 20 sit at the moment? Where the under 20, the fact that it is a good idea pressing forward to try to keep that development, because as you said, and I'll give you your dues 12 months ago, the fact that there is that gap, you can't go into the EPL where you're playing maybe with guys who are in their 40s and there's nowhere in between for you to get that. Is that under 20s league going to happen, or are there real stumbling blocks to stop it?
It's happened, hasn't it? They just put a press release out. We went to a meeting in Newcastle. And the press release is that it won't be a super elite 20s, but that England and Scotland are both going to have national under 20 leagues. So that's a step forward. That's a step forward. What I would like to see then is the best of the best, like the conferences that they have, playing each other on a weekly basis, because that's how you drive the quality. You know, if you look at every league, there's one or two teams in the league running away with it, and the bottom teams are 30 points different. Well, that's not competition. We have to quickly create competition with our best young talent to drive them up to the national team level and to drive them up through into the professional teams and meet them on with that. But you know what? It hasn't gone how I wanted it. It hasn't gone how the rest of Europe are doing it. But it's a start.
Let's talk about your recruitment approach as well, the team that you're building. You know, you look around the Erhard Conference, you've brought in the likes of Fitzgerald from the Brayhead clan, you look at the Nottingham Panthers who have got a bit heavier, the Nickersons come into Belfast, the actual competition, especially in that conference, is getting a lot tighter, and it looks like it's going to be a lot more physical.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know physically, I mean from a fighting point of view, maybe. I mean, from a physical point of view, I don't know. I don't think we use that physical. I know the outside screen is far more physical, not from a fighting point of view, but from a finish and hit and a speed point of view than the Elite League is. So, but it will be feisty, if that's what you mean. And yeah, I mean, when teams, you know, put these type of players together to protect their skills, guys, that's the way it is. That's the way it's done here. And it'll be good competition, without a doubt.
It's early doors, of course, looking around the league. A lot of teams aren't really building quick. But are you seeing some gems there? Are you seeing some real competition between the top teams?
No, the league looks really strong. I mean, even in a couple of years I've been away, it's getting stronger and stronger and stronger, even the Northern Conference. And, you know, the gap between the teams is far closer than it's ever been, especially since the conference thing's been brought out, you know. So I think it's going to be a great year, and this means some very good signs. And two things, I think, you know, over the last couple of years, the league has cleaned things up a little bit, and I think that attracts different types of players. And secondly, you know, the pound is very strong to the euro right now, to the Canadian dollar. So that opens a lot of doors. And there's, you know, there's other teams in Europe that are going down on the import front because they have their own talent, so they're not paying as well. And that obviously forces guys across to the UK. So I think it's looking an exciting year, without a doubt.
It's funny you say about that being a draw in, and there's been a suggestion recently that the Sheffield Steelers aren't taking the route of the university places this season. Is that correct? And if so, why not?
Yeah, we are. We have two guys that are on university deals now.
Okay.
You know, I mean, it's, you know, like I say, a lot of rumours are spread around. I mean, the right guy becomes available and we've got a university place, we'll use that.
And how much of a draw?
I mean, I think, you know,
so I was going to say, how much of a draw is the Champions Hockey League?
Very much a big draw. People and players want to be part of that. They want to be noticed. They want to be playing against the, you know, the best in Europe, and that's certainly who we're playing, as well as Bayhead. You know, so that's been a bigger draw than the school.
Just on that, just to finish off talking about the Champions Hockey League, you know, your expectations there. It's a fantastic opportunity for the Sheffield Steelers. It's, you know, the two really tough opposition in Finland and in Sweden, but it's for what it can provide and the exposure it can provide for the club as well, and the experience for those players going into the Elite League. It's a very exciting prospect.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, I'm lucky enough to have, you know, worked over in Sweden for a year and seen the talent level, and it's scary. It's scary. And, you know, from the SHL to the Alton, there's 5-6 teams in the Alton team that are playing the SHL. And likewise, you know, it really is quite close in ability. And, for London, I was driven as quick as it gets. And yet, you know, over in Finland, a very good team. They've won a couple of championships in there. 6-7 years, so it's going to be a huge test for us. But it's something we should be relishing, you know, something that we should be excited about. And we have to practice to be able to compete at that level. And, we're going to have hopefully a good 10-12 days together before that competition. It's nothing compared to that. You know, these guys will be, well, they haven't finished. They're there now. You know, they're working now. It's done totally different in Europe. But at least we've given ourselves a chance to have a little mini camp before we go. And, you know, we'll do whatever we can to get a result, but we're under no illusions of the test.
And my final question has to be, have you thought about that moment when you walk into the Sky Dome and you're standing on the away bench?
A lot, yeah.
And?
Yeah. Well, it's going to, you know, it's going to be, you know, I don't sit there and think about it every minute every day, but it flashes through your mind. And I hired some ice for my son and his friends in Coventry, and I took them out for a little session on the weekend, and I kind of looked around and I thought, well, I'll be on the other side of it very shortly, and I'll be getting the stick that comes with it.
Well, fantastic. Listen, Paul, it's great to have you back in the Elite League. We look forward to this forthcoming season, and we really appreciate you taking the time to chat this.
Pleasure. Anytime, mate.
Thanks to Paul, one of the true gents of British ice hockey. Coach, he pointed out there, you know, talking about his the guys coming in with European experience. I've seen these guys play, is what he said. And it's quite apparent that the fact that his recruiting process, especially quite a number of these imports, have been guys that he has seen play, guys in Denmark, guys in Sweden that he has experience with. And maybe that shows that those 2 years are going to bode well coming into this forthcoming Elite League season.
Well, I tell you, Paul Thompson has a lot of plans for that Sheffield Steelers outfit this season. He's bringing, as we already know, and he'll have mentioned it to you, Paddy, in that interview, and we've heard him talk to other journalists and what have you since taking over as the Sheffield Steelers head coach about the total change in culture. he has seen these guys play over in Denmark, which is a very good standard and what have you. There's only a couple of imports in those leagues, so whenever you actually bring in a couple of imports, you can be very selective. They bring in really good players and guys who are looking to use it sometimes as a stepping board onto bigger leagues. And certainly is a Coyle, the defenseman, mm-hmm. is a major standout player, according to Thompson. Said he's going to be different class to watch. But actually, Paul Thompson is going to shake a few trees there in Sheffield. I think certainly nobody will be left under any illusions as to who the boss is in Sheffield, and certainly the expectations that he has on his team. And he talked extensively about fitness. You know, it's such a key thing. You know, what was it you hear him talking about? All this bigger, faster, stronger, quicker, and all this type of stuff. He's very big on conditioning, what have you. So he's seen these guys that he's brought in. He sees how good they are athletically, how professional these guys are behind the scenes and away from the rink. That's half the battle. How good are these guys away from the rink? Are they going hitting bars? No, they're not. Not these guys that Paul Thompson bringing in. They're all heading to the gym to get bigger and faster and stronger. They're doing extra workouts on the ice as well and looking after themselves conditionally. And Thompson's going to change quite a few things there in Sheffield. I have no question about that.
Davey, how much pressure is there on Thompson with regards to he's coming into the league champions? It's the Sheffield Steelers, a franchise like our own that demands success. And this isn't an unknown coach. This is a guy who's won things. This is a guy who's picked up an actual Grand Slam. This is a guy. Oh, sorry, did I say Grand Slam? No, there was no crossover cup. This is a guy who is a guy who's won trophy after trophy. And so there's no, what's the word? There's no mystery about Paul Thompson and what he can do. So therefore, there has to be a pressure on Thompson coming in there to hit the ground running and produce pretty quickly, because they've made a big decision in ditching Jared Adams with two championships in 2 years to bring him in.
I don't think anyone who knows me would disagree that when I went through my Coventry Blaze hatred phase, that the one thing that I was consistent about was my respect for Paul Thompson as a coach. Mm-hmm. I always, the articles I wrote, used to write for the programme and stuff, always had a lot of time for Tomo. And I think that's one of his biggest problems is going to be his himself, the history that he has with the league. There'll be a lot of expectation on him. You know, it's easy to say he's going to go and shake things up in there. It just depends how patient Smith's going to be with him, because he hasn't been all that patient this last few seasons, even with the success that Jared Adams brought them over the last two seasons. And a league and a playoff is not to be sniffed at in, what, about 14 months? He brought them the two biggest trophies that you can get. So it just depends on, Smith maybe this time is just going to let him change the culture at the club. Culture club?
Yeah.
but he's already recruiting well. You talked about the British players. The British players that Sheffield have, they're going to try and run that four-line system, no doubt. Ben O'Connor, Luke Ferreira, young guy, Robert Dowd, all good players. Bringing Mossienko back, bringing Wah back are two big, league champions last season. And what he's added from these guys that he's seen playing in Europe is, the mixture's coming right there. Another one for him is going to be the goaltending situation. There was talk about Eunice going back there. It's fighting between him and Edinburgh Capital, who's going to come back there. But the situation, coach, that you've already spoke about a couple of times in the show, there is a dearth of goaltending out there because of the new rules. It'll be interesting to see whether those rules are allowed to be bent or not at some stage.
I think he's, I would imagine that he's certainly keeping on, certainly from what you see in the PR and what have you that comes out of Bob Westerdale and the Sheffield Star, whatever the paper is that he writes for. I think they're keeping him on the long finger, but I think as time slips by, I mean, if you were Josh Unis, if it was you, would you be happy to be kept in the long finger this length of time? Basically what it's saying is, listen, I'm looking for somebody better, but if I can't actually find them, then I'll re-engage you. I don't know how that would go down as for a professional or for anybody in any walk of life. No matter what job you're going in for, I'll consider you, but I'm actually looking for somebody else, to be honest with you. Mm. So, I think that's certainly a last-ditch option, in my opinion.
Yeah, at the same time, there's an awful lot of players, out skaters in that position all summer long. you know, it's players within our own organisation that don't look like they're going to be back, who are in a situation, are they waiting on a call from Belfast? Are they, you know, is there other clubs that are in for them? What's their, you know, their forward situations? It's probably quite a stressful time for a hockey player at this time of year, you know, just not knowing what you're going to be doing next year. Still no firm job offers. And, you know, it's, would your niece want to go to, would he really want to go to Edinburgh and be that guy? Don't know.
Just finally on your niece. I mean, I thought he was excellent. I think he just had a couple of kind of blowout games. And yeah, the one real standout one was the playoff final where, you know, trampoline pads. bar that, you know, there was...
No, I don't know, Coach. That night I went down as your private chauffeur to the gross little tent. He was pretty abysmal too.
Yeah, well, I think that's probably one of the couple of games that I was thinking of, David. I agree with you. But when he was hot, I tell you, he was mega hot, wasn't he? He was almost unbeatable on occasion. So, yeah, listen, time will tell on that one, Paddy.
But that brings up the good question then. Like, he only played 23 games. Is he eligible?
Yeah.
Well, I wonder what the eligibility is. If you played for the team last season, can you stick with that team? You know, is that his only option?
No idea.
I couldn't find a press release on it to see what the exact situation was.
There is an IHUK press release available. I think it's linked on the Elite League site, but I don't think it makes that clear. I think, it says 50%, and Coach says that Tomo says it's 75%. Yeah. You know, there seems to be a bit of a grey area around the whole thing, but it's certainly having its effect. Guys, what I will say is...
And the fall has been a wee bit less stringent on goaltending situations because it's that key position.
It is. It's a unique position in regards to all teams. What I will say is, when I look at that roster, is, Coach, it's put together quite early, obviously CHL in mind. But I brought up the fact with Paul that 12 months ago he was dead against the import rule being increased. But now it sounds like his hands are tied. You have to succeed. Tony Smith putting the money forward. You can't really take the chance. I did off the air, and I got to go ahead to have a chat about this, but off the air I did say that the fact that the structure of the league doesn't allow you to take the chance on many British players, because games in October count as much as games in March in order to try to get that league title. If there was a better playoff structure and the playoffs were more of a focus than the league title, you may be able to allow you to take a chance on more British players. But from what he said, despite his misgivings with the fact that the import rule has increased, which has allowed them to bring back Rod Sarich but release Phil Hill, his hands are tied in that respect.
Listen, I think Corey intimates something fairly similar when I asked him. We'll hear that in part two of this week's show. You know, these guys are employed by a club to do a job, and you have to conform to and put the best team out on the ice to help your individual team win. So in this case, Paul Thompson, he's come back to the Elite League. I personally don't think Tomo would necessarily want to be back in the Elite League. I think his preference would still be out in Europe. But he's back. He's come back. He's taken a very big job, an important job, with the Sheffield Steelers. And he's got to come up with the results. I think it was Davies mentioned it there a few minutes ago. I mean, there'll be pressure on Paul Thompson. Tony Smith is a guy that hasn't shown a lot of patience over the years with his coaches. Every time you hear him signing Doug Christensen and then he brings in Jared Adams, you keep hearing him saying the same thing. You know, I think we've got the right guy, the right fit. You know, a real stealer, this and blah blah blah. I think it'll be interesting to see a bit of pressure on Tomo. But if you're speaking to a lot of the coaches around the league, the Elite League, I mean, there's none more impressive along with Chuck Weber than Paul Thompson. I have to say, he's a very articulate man. He knows his hockey inside out. He's gone off to Europe and gained that experience, and a real student of the game as well. And at the end of the day, he's got to do a job and put together the team as per the rules of the Elite League. And Tomo's gone on record many times talking about the British development, how he would like to go about changing the whole infrastructure of the Elite League and UK hockey in general.
you know, I personally think someone like him should be a lot more involved behind the scenes for UK hockey, because there's not too many guys that have that experience across the water and, you know, and that breadth of knowledge that Paul Thompson does.
David, we look at Phil Hill there, all being, we talk about players being kept on the long finger. He seems to have been released, but told he can train and can we use you for the CHL? The British players for Sheffield, you know, Mark Thomas has moved on to be a traffic cone at the Manchester Phoenix instead. They've brought back the likes of Rob Dowd, John O'Phillips. They're obviously going to be in the market for one or two more Brits.
Yeah, although saying that, there's not that many of them still available out there, that's really, isn't there? The way this league gathers up, sort of April, May, June time, all the Brits, you know, have contracts under their noses, or else they're released and down to the EPL, you know, and I don't really see that many more moves in the British side for the likes of Sheffield. But looking at their D-core is huge. Yeah. Not a player under 6 foot, sort of 180, 200 pounds. You know, they're going to be a big, big unit there. Coyle, that coach has talked about there, Jace Coyle's coming in very mobile, apparently, you know, very, very good skater, good power play man. And Eddie Fitzgerald, Hay, Moyer, Connor Sarich, you know, all quality guys. And, you know, if you're able to have a guy like Rod Sarich as your sort of seventh D man, maybe part-time forward, you've got a good core guys there that are going to, and, you know, championships are built on defense. You know, your forwards finish games off, but your D wins things. As we said, for every team, it's going to be crucial who gets in between the pipes.
It'll be interesting as well to see how they get on in the Champions Hockey League. They've got two very difficult opponents with trips to Finland and to Sweden. Gentlemen, on that note, I think we'll bring to an end part one, and I'll speak to you again in a bit.
Cheers, buddy.
At this point, the music's going to be fading in, and it's going to be like the end of the show.
See ya.